What's the impact on us? Immediately, the impact on us is growth. This year, we were hoping for 1 to 3% growth. That's what we announced around budget time. But with all this uncertainty in the world, MTI has revised the forecast. They've just put out a new forecast today. They put it down to 0 to 2%. Do you know for sure? No. Could it be zero? Possible. Can it be negative? Will we have a recession this year? If you look at the numbers, we don't think so, but it could happen. And it could happen because actually you really don't know. You're not looking at whether companies will, whether consumers are ordering, whether demand is good, whether your product is improving, whether everybody is prospering, and therefore I take an optimistic view, let's invest first. I think if I'm fast, I'll get something. What you don't know is what new policies are going to come. What are other countries going to do? Then how will America retaliate? And you ask me to guess? It's impossible. So the uncertainty is very high, and that's a problem. A problem in the short term. That's a problem, as I explained earlier, in the medium to long term. So we must expect slower growth this year, a recession somewhere down the road, maybe not this year, but quite possibly at some point. And over the medium term, 5-10 years, that this is going to be a less friendly world that we are in. So the difference between this time and previous crises is previously you can come out into a world which is working, and we fit in, we work again. This time, we are okay, but the world is not going to be okay, and we have to do our best to make sure that we look after ourselves in this much less hospitable world. And that's going to be just on the economic side. On the strategic side, on the geopolitical side, I don't want to go and talk a lot about it tonight, but you know about US-China. You know about the problems which are going to be worsened because of the trade. And so we must expect more US-China tensions, and therefore a less tranquil, a less stable region, and more demands on us to work very hard to be friends with both, and to find our own way forward without getting into troubled waters. So I think for Singapore, it means some very serious implications. This time is different, and we have to understand that, even as we think, what can we do about it? So what can we do about it? I think there are two areas where you have to think about, one internationally and the other one domestically. Internationally, I think we have to continue to support free trade, multilateralism, the WTO, and to try to keep the system going and not collapse, even though the US is abandoning the rules. The US is the biggest economy. They come out, it's a significant impact on the rest of the world. But the rest of the world are still there, and if we can work together, I think we have a fair shot at keeping the system up. I give you an example of how this can be done. You will have heard of the TPP, right? The Trans-Pacific Partnership. You don't need to know the details, but basically 12 countries got together to negotiate a free trade agreement. Singapore had some part to get this process started right at the beginning. One of those countries was the US. In fact, President Obama was very active in pushing the negotiations and trying to get a deal on the TPP. And he succeeded. But the last step was to get the deal ratified in Congress. Then America is in. He couldn't do that. He left it to his successor. He hoped that it would be Hillary. Hillary said, no, I repudiate this, although she was also involved. And anyway, Hillary lost and Mr. Trump won. And Mr. Trump has said, if I come in, I'm going to kill it on day one. So when he was sworn in on the 20th of January 2017, on day one, he killed the TPP. But fortunately, the TPP didn't die because there were still 11 members other than the US. And Japan was still there, and Mr. Shinzo Abe was Prime Minister of Japan. And he exercised leadership, he rallied the other countries, he renegotiated the deal so as to exclude all the parts where we had accommodated American interests and save the rest of the deal. And he got the other 11 countries together, and we all signed, and enough ratified, we now have a CPTPP. So America leaves, the game can still carry on. And in the same way, in the global trading system, America doesn't want to play by the rules anymore, but the other countries, if we can maintain the system as we trade with each other, I think that's important, and that will be very valuable to countries like Singapore. So we will work with other countries to try and make that happen. That's the first thing we can do. The second thing we can do is to promote trade arrangements with like-minded partners. For example, we are in the we have the ASEAN group. We have an ASEAN free trade agreement. The EU is a major partner, and we can do business with the EU. ASEAN can have an FTA with the EU, negotiate with them, expand the inkblot of free trade, create more avenues for us to cooperate win-win with one another. And Singapore is pushing for that. In fact, we met, the ASEAN trade ministers met, and I think they will be working at this and working with other partners too. The CPTPP, that is valuable too. That can also grow, can also find partners. UK joined the CPTPP. They need to. They had left the EU. They had no alternative. They came in, but we welcome them. But the EU, looking around for partners, says, how about EU and CPTPP, we get together, one in the Asia Pacific, and including Canada and Mexico, and Peru and Chile, and the other one in Europe. And if we can get together, it's something valuable. So the TPP members are keen. The European Commission President von der Leyen, she's keen. So I hope that if we push that, we can get something. This is one of those situations where you want momentum. If you are sitting there doing nothing, something will happen to you. If you are standing up and pushing something, you may make more progress, you may make less progress, but you will make some progress, and you will be better off than where you are. And this is an area where we need to make progress, and Singapore will help to push. Thirdly, externally, we need to do more with our ASEAN partners. Within ASEAN, we have an FTA, as I said, but you can do a lot more together, even with Malaysia, with Indonesia, but also as ASEAN. And I hope that with this additional impetus, we can do more of that. For example, Singapore and Malaysia, we are talking about the Johor-Singapore SEZ. In Johor Bahru, or in Johor, and you set it up there, companies can go there, they can have favorable terms, and Singapore companies prosper, Malaysian business will benefit, Malaysia will benefit, and foreign companies can be there, can be in Singapore, and therefore they also can benefit. And in the process, Singapore and Malaysia, we work closer together. That's good. When that happened, there were reports in the Indonesian newspapers to say, well, Singapore and Malaysia are doing an SEZ. What's Singapore doing with Indonesia? And answer is, we are doing things with Indonesia, but I think there's a certain amount of competition because they see us as being able to add value. And I hope that with this pressure within ASEAN, we'll do more. So internationally, globally, with WTO, try and keep the system intact. Big partners between trading groups, try and come together and form bigger blobs. And within ASEAN, try to make ASEAN stronger, more relevant. And Singapore, we are small, but our trade is not small. I think we have some contribution to make. Secondly, we have to respond to the new situation domestically. And I say in three ways. First, in terms of practical support. Secondly, in terms of psychological preparation. And thirdly, politically. In terms of practical support, we need to help households, we need to help businesses, and we need to keep the economy growing. To help households, I think you know we have a lot of things. On cost of living, certainly, is our first big item. Typically, households this year will be getting around $4,000 in various forms of assistance. We are helping workers who are displaced, for example, with the Job Seeker Support Scheme. We designed this expecting dislocation, expecting people to be displaced. And this is what we will need if, in fact, the tariffs dislocate supply chains and there are significant disruptions to our industries. Then the workers who are displaced will have the Job Seeker Support Scheme to give them support to tide over the period when they're out of a job, looking for a new job, or training for a new job. We will have support for reskilling. I talked about that earlier. And overall, I would say the budget package we have is enough for now. If the situation gets a lot worse, we will do more, and I can assure you, we are able to do more. Secondly, we have to help the businesses. We've set up an economic resilience task force under DPM Gan Kim Yong in order to navigate the uncertainties and to help businesses transform themselves. So it's not just to deal with immediate problems, it is also to deal with a longer term, take this opportunity of the immediate challenge to get ourselves prepared to be more competitive in the long term. And NTUC is going to be part of this task force, looking at how best to support workers through this. So, secondly, I think we need to be psychologically prepared. We need to be prepared for a more troubled world. You must know that bad weather is coming, but at the same time, we can take comfort knowing that other countries are also facing the similar challenges, and Singapore is readier than most of them to deal with these challenges. Readier because we have the plans, we have the resolve, we have the experience, we have the resources, we have the unity. We are ready to do this, and we can do this together. One of the important things which we must do if we are going to go through this together is to look to fault lines and stresses and strains which will build up in our society. Because if you want to go in and you say, let's be united, it's not just wearing the same T-shirt. It is making sure we look after one another, taking care of one another, making sure that when fault lines come up, people who are having greater difficulties, people who may be left behind, people who are dislocated, they don't feel left out, they don't feel alone, they know that others care for them, Singapore cares for them. We will help you, you help yourself, we work at it together, we are in this together. I think that's a very important mindset which we must have during a crisis, going into a crisis, and which we are able to do. It is the problem which in America has led to the pressures and the grievances and dissatisfactions which have led to the government to pursue all these very drastic policies, because they have certain parts of America which have been left behind, industries all doing badly. They call it the Rust Belt, Ohio, Pennsylvania, down south, Carolina, Idaho, not Idaho, Illinois. These are places where the industries have all done badly, and the workers have no jobs. The populations are left out. The blue-collar workers in America, their jobs across the country have not done well. Their incomes have not done well. Their lives have been blighted by drugs, by unemployment, by crime. Left behind, they voted for change, drastic change, and they want to break the system. They want a different world. And we must never allow our population or some part of our population to feel like that. We are going to have stresses and strains too, because there will be retrenchments if there is a recession elsewhere. There will be dislocation if the supply lines are interrupted. There is going to be dislocation also if technology comes and we're not prepared for it. If AI comes, if robotics come on a big scale and your jobs are taken away or transformed and you can't do the new jobs and you're out of a job, then it is no comfort to say that the GDP has gone up, but my life is not better. And so far, we have prevented that from happening in Singapore, and I think in this situation, we must do double to make sure it does not happen to Singapore. If you can do all that, look after the households, look after the physical needs, make sure we are psychologically prepared, then we can also address the political issue, which is to unite as one Singapore team, working closely with the government. And you need to have a good government, an effective government, a strong government, in order to take care of Singapore. And it has to be strong domestically in order to be strong internationally. Let me explain this. I think when you say, on foreign policy, Singapore must speak with one voice, I think everybody will agree. Even the opposition agrees. And when you go overseas in a parliamentary delegation, people from different parties, we join the same parliamentary delegation and we go representing Singapore. But the opposition go one further. They say, well, overseas we stand together. Domestically, less challenge. Now, that is a problem. Why is that a problem? I tell you, I've been attending international conferences for 20-something years. In fact, for 30, 40 years, but last 20 years as PM. Now, fortunately, PM Wong is doing it. But let me tell you my experience from these conferences. We meet each other, right? And regularly, because the conferences happen every year, every other year. I see you. Next time I see you, maybe I see your successor. And in some countries, every time I go to the conference, I see a new PM. In some sometimes I see the PM, I look at his delegation, I see some of the faces there, I read the newspapers, I know that some of those people are hoping to be the next PM. And sometimes it turns out so. So when you meet each other, I assess you, you assess me. I will ask myself, I'm talking to you now, Your Excellency, Prime Minister, yes, sir. Will you still be here in 5 years' time? Will your policies still be here in 5 years' time? Can I do business with you, commit, and we do something, make a plan to build a factory? May take 2-3 years. To break even on a factory may take 10-20 years. If you're not going to be here, can I make a deal? So I assess them. Do you think they assess me? Of course. So they will see what is happening. They will have their embassies here writing reports. And if you have different views in Singapore and embassies as well, this PM makes very good speeches, but actually he has a lot of political problems at home. Well, when you meet them, you'll be received with their courtesies, but I think you're not carrying the same weight and you will not be able to defend and advance Singapore's interests in the same way. On the other hand, if they know you are on top of your situation at home, if they know you have strong support, good support, they know you're in touch with the population and you have got your domestic issues well under control, then they take you seriously. In fact, they'll ask you, by the way, your healthcare system, I hear, is not bad. Tell me how you do it. Or as happened to me once, we were discussing corruption. This was quite early when one of my first APEC meetings in SBM, and one of the big countries said to me, Singapore, tell us how you combat corruption. They know about us. They want to know how it works. Makes a big difference. Therefore, to be effective internationally, to be strong at all, you have to be united domestically. And when people say Singapore is a safe haven, in an uncertain world, in Singapore, you have security, you have safety. That's why people want to put family offices here. That's why people want to deposit money here. That's why people have confidence and put factories worth billions of dollars here, which take 20, 30 years to pay back because of Singapore being a safe haven. And one big part of that safe haven, one big factor, is stable politics, good politics. So I know that many Singaporeans want more opposition MPs. If you ask why, they'll say, well, we'd like a stronger check and balance on the PAP. And I would say the opposition have a role to play in our democratic system. It's here to stay. Opposition MPs are never going to disappear from Parliament. I accept this. That's the way democracies work. We started in a very unusual position with almost overwhelming PAP presence in Parliament, almost zero opposition, and now there's significant opposition, and I don't think that's ever going to change. And we will work with this. But Singapore also needs an effective system of government, which is led by a good and capable ruling party, and that depends on elections producing outcomes which work for Singapore. And what are outcomes which work for Singapore? They are when, after the election, the country is able to generate a leadership which is capable, which is committed, which is honest, which can run a competent and efficient, effective government, defend our place in the world, and lead Singapore safely through crisis. That's ultimately what it's about, right? What the election's about, to choose who's to lead the country and to make sure that the team which can lead the country can do so well. In fact, ideally, can the team which can lead the country most successfully and most effectively. And part of the system is you have the ruling party and you have the opposition party, you have ruling MPs and opposition MPs. But if voters keep on electing more opposition MPs, even when the government is doing a good job, then beyond a point, it must weaken the government's ability to govern, to form the best possible team for Singapore, and to run this country the way Singaporeans have come to expect. It must be so. Some people say the civil service is marvelous. You don't need a good minister. Anybody can be the minister. The PermSec will do the work. You just sit there and say yes or no. It's like saying you don't need a good SecGen. The unions are fine. SecGen just sits there and says everything is good. Really? When you work in a company, is that how it works? If you see a company where the boss is doing that sort of thing, do you think good people are still going to be in the company? Or they'll say, this place no hope, better go and work for a better boss. To run a good team, you need a good leader. And if you don't have a good leader, the good team will melt away. And we need to have that kind of leadership, that kind of quality, in order for Singapore to perform and to succeed the way it deserves to do. I give you an example, GE 2020. During COVID. When COVID came, we were about a year away from elections, but when the pandemic started to get serious, I decided to call elections as soon as practicable. Some people said, no, put it off as late as possible, even declare emergency can postpone till after COVID. I said, no, you go now. Circuit breaker can't be helped, deal with an immediate problem. Once that was done, I said, let's call an early general election, get a new team elected with a fresh, full mandate. We are going to have a lot of challenges. We are going to have to make a lot of difficult decisions. People are going to go through a lot of dislocation and hardship. We must have our minds focused on fighting COVID, and we can't do that if every day I want to make a new COVID policy, I have to ask myself, should I do this before or after the election? Singaporeans will die. Literally. So we went, we got a good mandate, and thereafter we focused on fighting COVID as one nation, and I'm relieved to say, not unsuccessfully. And it was because we were able to unite and put our team together and be able to focus on solving problems. It was a good result, but unfortunately, we lost Sengkang GRC, and in the process, we lost Brother Ng Chee Meng as a candidate. But it was a setback for the labor movement, but fortunately, Brother Chee Meng had the staying power and the gumption to continue serving as SecGen, and fortunately, the labor movement continued to support him. And it also supported the other leaders on the team, the PAP MPs like Heng Chee Hao, Desmond Tan, Patrick Tay, Desmond Chu, as well as stalwart union leaders like Sister Tana, Sister Mary, and many others on the Central Committee and in the unions. And therefore, during the pandemic, the labor movement was well led, and it could be a good partner to the government. And it played a key role. Saved jobs, it pushed for skills upgrading, it administered SERS, the Self-Employed Person Income Relief Scheme, so that it wasn't just helping union members or bargainable employees, but workers of Singapore, including self-employed workers. And it looked beyond the pandemic to set up company training committees, CTCs, to support businesses in upskilling. Turned out to be a very successful project. And so this year in the budget, we put another $200 million, I think, support, because you had run out of money. But we were very happy that you had over-fulfilled your plan and good program. We will support it. Do more. And therefore, NTUC was able to help us bounce back stronger from COVID. And this is what tripartism means. The government, the unions, employers working together. In fact, this is what the symbiotic relationship between the PAP and the NTUC can do for workers and for Singapore. And that's why PM Lawrence and his 4G team have committed to strengthen tripartism and the symbiotic relationship, symbiotic partnership. I look forward to you supporting this team in this next general election, whenever it's called, and especially supporting the labor leaders and the PAP union advisors in the team. And this evening's has been a sober speech, but I thought it was my duty to come and to talk to you directly, candidly, honestly, and share with you things as they are. It's a lesson I learned at the beginning of my political journey, when I first became a minister and we were dealing with an economic recession, a severe recession in 1985, and we had to cut CPF, employer CPF, by 15 percentage points. Those of you old enough will remember what a shock and what a difficult decision that was. But we were able to carry it because the union members had confidence in their leaders. At that time, Brother Ong Teng Cheong was a sec gen. And the government ministers, Teng Cheong himself, Goh Chok Tong, Lim Boon Heng, who was, I think, deputy sec gen then. We went in person, talked to the union leaders, talked to the workers, session after session, to get them to understand what was at stake and to get them to support policies which would get us out of the difficulty. And fortunately, they believed us, they had trust in us, they took the advice, they accepted the medicine, and Singapore recovered much faster than expected. And therefore, whenever I'm confronted with a crisis like this or a situation like this, my immediate instinct is, go, let's talk, understand, what is this about? What can we do together? How to dig out of the hole, not dig yourself deeper and deeper. So I think that we can go into battle with confidence. We have the resources, we have the experience, we are ready. We've done it before, and we'll show the world that we can do it again. The upcoming elections will be crucial. It's a changed world. We have a fresh team in charge, and we will have a new resolve to tackle the challenges and to emerge stronger. PM Lawrence is leading the PAP into elections for the first time, seeking his own mandate to take Singapore forward. Forward through this crisis, forward with our plans, forward for our future. I hope that Singaporeans understand what is happening, what is at stake, and what we must do together to secure our future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, SMB. May I kindly invite you to remain on stage as we welcome our other panel members.